It is 1965, and if only, and swinging London is coming into its prime years. The streets are alive with mods and rockers, playboys and good time girls, all reveling in the blossoming artistic, creative and cultural energies of the decade. Amid the colour and the chaos is a boy sporting drainpipe jeans, an immaculately tailored sports coat and a half-inch wide tie. A devoted fan of The Who, he looks the part in his pristine mod gear. As the lead singer of The Lower Third, his talent is shaping itself into something truly special. His name is Davy Jones. In 10 years, he will be unrecognisable as fresh-faced boy of 1965, and in just over 50 years, his death will be mourned by millions. His legacy is the story of the greatest rock star of all time. It's also the story of the book At the Birth of Bowie, Life with the Man Who Became a Legend. The Lower Third's drummer joins me live on the line, and that man is Phil Lancaster. Phil, good afternoon to you.
Oh, good afternoon, Giles. Thanks for having me.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. I mean, where do you start? The drummer, how did you meet? I mean, the drummer in Bowie's first band, I mean, that's got to be something. But how did it start? How did you meet? Where were you? What was it like?
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, you've already stated it was 1965. I'd just come back from Europe. I'd been playing in France and Germany, needed another job. I'd heard The Who on the radio over in Germany, didn't know who they were. I thought it was a great sound. I'd love to do that, I thought. So when I advertised for work and I answered advertisements for work when I got back, I got a call from a guy called Graham Rivens, and he was a bass player in a band called The Lower Third. And he said, we play very loud and we do sort of different stuff. I said, well, that sounds interesting. So he said, okay, meet our singer. His name's Davy Jones. Go to the Gioconda in Denmark Street, and he's a skinny guy with blonde hair, and see him. So I turned up at the Gioconda, which is a cafe in Denmark Street where most musicians used to meet up in those days, also known as Tin Pan Alley. That's Denmark Street. And I walked through the door, walked straight up to the counter at the very other end of the cafe, and said, you know, a bloke called Davy Jones. I said, yeah, you just walked past him. He's at the door on the payphone. So I turned around, walked all the way back, and there he was, just finishing his phone call. So a very slim guy, long blonde hair, bleached out and grown out. Roots were all grown out halfway down the length of his hair. His hair was down to his shoulders, by the way. Anyway, very impressive looking guy. So I introduced myself. He did the same, and we sat down, had a cup of tea, and we got talking. And basically, we talked all the way through our interests, what literature we liked, what musicians we liked, what singers we liked. He did an impersonation of Bob Dylan for me right there and then, and found that we liked each other and got on very well. And that was it. There was no audition. He said, right, we'll pick you up Saturday. We're playing in Brighton.
Right, okay, fair enough. Question begs the question, what was Bowie's audition? What was Bowie's impersonation of Bob Dylan like at that point?
Excellent. It was spot on, Giles, spot on.
And also, you said the other thing is, you said that you know you like the sound of The Who. So what was the sound? The Who were maximum R&B. And if you think about Bowie, you know, Davy Jones's early stuff, was that the sort of thing that you were going to, or was it very apparent early on that this was going to be something a little bit different? Tell us a bit about the style of your music.
A bit different. He was already writing his own material. Majority of the set, you know, of our set was his own material, which of course nobody had ever heard before. So that either worked or it didn't, depending where you were in the country. I mean, in London, it worked very well. We were quite a different band in that regard. We played very loud. We were, according to our lead guitarist, we were the second loudest band in London apart from The Who. And basically, we played David Bowie tunes. You know, he wrote them himself. We did also cover other people's music, Pretty Things, and Van Morrison, for example, in them. But other than that, it was very different. And we had quite a different repertoire to other people in that we incorporated a tune from Mary Poppins, and also we did Mars from the Planet Suite.
So was this a harder version of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious that I haven't heard yet? Was that what we're talking about here, Phil?
No. Yeah, that would have been a good one. I'd love to hear him sing that one, to be honest. No, Chim Chiminy.
Ah, well, there Chim you go, Chiminy. Then. Chim Chiminy.
Dum-ba-dum, dum-ba-dum.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. What was because, you know, we think of Barry, you know, David Bowie touring, you know, with Spiders and the whole bits and pieces, and then the huge tours later on. What was it like touring with a young Davy Jones, you know, with your band?
Very well. It was brilliant in that, not apart from the creativeness that he brought to that band, and which I loved, because it's just what I was looking for. It was a lot of fun to be with, and we had basically a lot of good times, a lot of you know, hard times as well, because we were struggling a lot of the time to make money, and we traveled up and down the country in our ambulance, which meant we had to amuse ourselves. So it was Dave and I in the back, and the other two guys in the front cab, and we'd make ourselves laugh. We invented our own language that was complete gobbledygook and stuff like that. So he was a very good sense of humour and very personable guy.
I mean, so you had a converted ambulance, basically, that you were lugging the gear around with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, that's right. The ambulance came as it had last been used as an ambulance, actually. It still had the bell and the sign and everything, which was illegal. But, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We used to get stopped by the police quite a bit, and one time a motorcycle cop wouldn't let us go until we disabled the bell and covered up the side of the ambulance. But of course, it all went working again afterwards. But basically, it was just an ambulance without the stretchers. It was one with seats down each side of the rear part of the ambulance. Yeah, so Dave and I used to sit in the two seats nearest the cab so that we could slide the window across to talk to the two guys in the front, you know.
And I suppose, presumably, one of the great things about having an ambulance as a touring vehicle is the fact that you can actually sleep in it. Although, apparently, David was quite a skinny chap and not good to sleep next to if you were male.
You've read the book, haven't you, John? Yeah. You're quite right, yeah. But basically, oftentimes, we had nowhere to stay. So the Dennis and Graham, that's Dennis Teacup Taylor, lead guitarist, and Graham Rhythms, the bass player, they would sleep in the cab because it was a great bench seat in there, as I remember. And Dave and I would then lay on the amplifiers in the back, because in the back with Dave and I, there was all the equipment, you know, my drums and all the amplifiers and everything. So Dave and I would lay on the amplifiers and wake up in the morning with the logo of Marshall Amps imprinted on our backs.
Obviously, you talked about, I mean, was there a lot of touring? I mean, had you got a record label at this, a record deal at this point, and did you go on sort of a UK tour, or was it really sort of gigging and you know, driving down to Brighton and then maybe going out to Reading and occasionally go, you know, hitting the northern climes of Birmingham and Manchester?
Yeah, the latter, actually, Giles. Yeah, we did have records out. Yeah, that's also the case. We had over the period we were together, we had two singles out, and the second one was the first ever Bowie release, first ever one that went out with his name on Bowie. Yeah, we gigged all over the country, basically, with no rhyme or reason to where we should be, you know, geographically. But we also had residences. We were resident of the Marquee Club. They were our agents as well, Marquee Artists. So we were resident at the Marquee Club Friday nights. And we also did a session Saturday afternoons for the Inecto show, which was a hair shampoo. But that was a good show, because they had everybody who was anybody in the pop world on that. You could be in the room with Stevie Wonder, Stevie Marriott, and The Who at one time, if you were lucky, you know. So that was what we did regularly. And then we, in between times, we'd go all up and down the country. And we also did a season down in Bournemouth and the Isle of Wight, and we had some big acts with us down there, including The Who.
It seems like, how did you get on with The Who then? I mean, that was the next question. Did you meet up with them? Did you get to meet the Moon the Loon? How did that go?
Well, yeah, we did. It was we had a nice, you know, nice time with The Who. We were resident down in a gig we used to do on a Friday, Saturday and Sundays. We used to play down Bournemouth, the Isle of Wight, and then back to Bournemouth. And we'd always have a star group with us. And the one week we had The Who with us. And so basically the afternoon that we were there, we were rehearsing in the ballroom, no one else there, and all of a sudden Pete Townsend walked in unannounced, because they were going to be playing with us that night, And he listened to us for a bit, and then when we finished, it was one of David's numbers, and when we finished rehearsing it, he said, oh, he came up, so, you know, we obviously knew who he was. He said, whose number is that? Who wrote that? So Dave said, I did. He said, that's a bit of a cheese off. That's just like my stuff. So that was that, and then and then we kind of got off the stage, and I don't know where Dave went. I sat down with Pete, and we started talking about, you know, how much money we were earning, or how much money he was earning, how much we weren't earning.
So when did it? What happened then? I mean, why did the lower third sort of wind down? Did it happen quite quickly? Did you realise that David was going to go off and do different things? What was the transformation then from Davy Jones to David Bowie, and how did you, if you like, how did the lower third end?
Right. Well, the transition from Jones to Bowie came because of a name problem with regard to a couple of other famous Davy Joneses around at the time. So there was a guy called Kenneth Pitt who became David's manager eventually, tipped off the manager we had at the time, Ralph Horton, that he should change his name. So that name change came quite early on when we were together. Then basically the demise of the band came because the manager was wanting to make David a solo artist, which of course eventually he always was destined to be. But in those days you didn't realise that. You thought you was a four-piece forever, you know. So basically the manager was at work there and was sort of hiving David off. So suddenly David wouldn't be travelling with us anymore in the ambulance. He would be travelling with the manager and his Jag, you know. And basically that came ahead when one afternoon at the Marquee, the manager said, you're not going to get paid for the gig tonight, boys. And we asked why, and he said, well, because I need the money for publicity or some such thing. So we was upset at that because the two guys I mentioned who came from Margate, they didn't have their mums and dads to go home to like Dave and I did. They had to sort of exist wherever they could, and they couldn't get fed at home or anything. So that was a great upset. So we gave him a fait accompli. We said, if you don't pay us tonight, we're not going to play. And unfortunately, it was a gig very close to David's heart at the Bromwell Club in his hometown. So basically that night we drew up at the Bromwell Club, unloaded our gear, or started to, and the Jag drove up with the manager and David in it. And so we said to him, well, look, are we going to get paid? And he said, no. So he said, well, we're not going to play. And that really, he said, well, that's it then. That's the end of it. And David was keeping out of the argument because he obviously wanted to play that night. But he wasn't siding with us either, if you know what I mean. He was keeping out of it. And that finished the band. That finished it.
What did you do then? What did you do? Did you try and get hold of David after that and get the band back together, or did you just sort of walk away and go to another band?
Well, I made my peace with him later. But I went and found another band, yeah, pretty soon after.
And, I mean, did you try and keep in contact? I mean, we're talking now, it's 3 years this week just gone of his death. Did you manage to speak to him during during the period after that, during the 70s, the 80s, even the 90s?
Well, I sort of, not long after we broke up, I saw him again at the Marquee, and we had a handshake, because he wouldn't shake my hand when we broke up. I think he was so upset with the fact that we were pulling out of that gig. But I did we did make up, so to speak, as you would call it, later at the Marquee. But then I was in touch with him about a year before he died, through his cousin, which was very heartwarming for me. It was a nice contact.
When did you decide the time was right then to put it all down in a book, and what a book it is?
Well, thanks for saying that, Giles. I wrote it a long time ago, about a really, many, many years ago, at the request of people who knew I'd played with David, knew David, and said, well, you should write these stories down, because they'd ask you what was it like and how'd it go, and you'd tell them. So I wrote it down as much as I could at the time, and about 2 years ago, I'd got together again with a guy called Kevin Cann, who's like the world expert on David Bowie, and actually worked with David on different projects. And I know him very well, and I do a radio show on his radio station called Cannon Radio. And so he said, well, look, we can do something with this. So he's a writer himself, so he's an editor. So we got together on the book and brought it to life again.
And what was it like, though? I mean, going through, you know, the bits and pieces, and there are obviously some great pictures in there as well. Must be some very, very great memories of some great times. And you know, it is the swinging 60s. It is 1965. You know, that was at the top, if you like, of swinging in London.
Well, it was. I mean, we didn't know it, of course. We didn't know it. I mean, it's all in retrospect now that you can see what a fantastic time it was. We were just guys trying to make it, you know, in the music business. But, yeah, I mean, going through it again, like you say, it brought back lots of memories. And, in fact, you know, I've been dragging even more out of the brain box since then that have surprised me. Stories that I've got lost in the mist of time, but very, you know, nostalgia and all the rest of it. And but you also realise what a great time we had, and although we had ups and downs, you know, the ups were brilliant.
Just, I mean, if there was an up for your time with, you know, Davy Jones and the lower third, what would be the up? What would be the highlight? Would it be the Paris concert? Would it be the Brighton concert? When? What would it be?
What a fantastic question. See if I can meet it, but I don't. Oh dear. I would say, I suppose really the Paris one, because, you know, you felt like you were stars there because they absolutely went bonkers for us. So the Paris one was wonderful in terms of the appreciation. We had great appreciation in London. I mean, the other place I'd always mention is the Marquee, because we had a fantastic following there because we were residents. So, you know, they got to know us and got to know the material. But yeah, the Paris one was a terrific highlight.
And I read something the other day that you signed away the rights to any royalties of the songs that you recorded, and some of them have been re-released and released many times.
Ouch. Yeah. I know. It sounds... Come on.
I was going to say, but in the article that I was handed a couple of days ago, it says that you said, and quote unquote, it was more important to me that it was part of something special, even historic.
Well, yeah, now, of course, yeah, that's now. I mean, at the time, as years went on, I kept seeing the singles re-released and re-released and re-released on compilations. You think, aye, there's a few bob I've thrown away there, but never been dwelt on, never dwelt on it that way. It's more like you're saying, it's, you know, it's great to have been part of it.
Well, it's absolutely great to have been speaking to you. The book is called At the Birth of Bowie. It's by Phil Lancaster. It's out now. It came out yesterday on John Blake Publishing. Don't say we're not current. Phil, if people want to find out more about you or about the book, I mean, do you do the social media thing? Is there a Facebook page or a web page we can go and have a look?
Yeah, well, I've got a page on Facebook called At the Birth of Bowie that I've just started. So people are very welcome to look at that and see what's on there. Gradually I'll build that up. And also, if they want to keep track on channelradio.co.uk, it's not totally Bowie orientated, but Kevin Cann is the director of it. I do a fortnightly show on it, or a weekly show, actually. And, you know, David gets a lot of mentions on there.
Superb. Well, it's been a pleasure and a privilege to speak to you. Really enjoyed today's interview. What are you up to over this weekend? What have you got next? Are you going to do another book, or you think, because everyone's always got one good book in them, or you think that's it for times, and you're going to stay back into the murky world of broadcasting?
I do a bit of songwriting of my own, so that's the sort of thing I'm doing, Giles.
Well, the book is called At the Birth of Bowie. It's by Phil Lancaster. It's out now. You can also download it on the TRE bookshop from our website. Phil Lancaster, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you very much, Giles. It's been my pleasure also.
Thank you very much.